disciples. You see, Israel was supposed to be the vine. Israel is supposed to be this sort of tree of life for the world that Paul even talks about, you know, the Gentiles being grafted into the olive branch or the tree, right? That Israel is supposed to be this community that brings life to the world, that people could plug into and experience God, that they could come to him. You see it in like stories of Jonah, where Jonah was sent out to Nineveh and to another nation, and he was proclaimed the message of God, that they needed to repent. Right? That Israel was sort of this ambassador for God, this true vine, that people could understand what God was like. However, Israel, as we see in the Old Testament, failed to live up to that. And so what Jesus says, Jesus comes as the fulfillment of that, and he says, I am the true vine. And I'm told in depictions of what the temple would have been like, that in if you can kind of see that up there at the top, that the crowning of the temple, that it's sort of this vine going around the temple to depict life, to depict flourishing, and what it meant that when people were coming to the temple, people were coming to God, that they were partaking into this sort of, maybe a sort of tree of life, this thing that would bear fruit, bring satisfaction, bring fulfillment as they were coming to him. And Jesus says, I am the vine. And here you have an image of Jesus as sort of this being the center of this tree and his disciples coming and becoming the branches. But what we see is that it's not like a vine. Like when I think of a vine, I'm thinking of like in a jungle and having, vines that you would jump on and you'd swing from one tree to another. But that's not the depiction. Instead, he's thinking of more of a grapevine, as that would have been something more common to them. And when you look at the grapevine and what we understand as a tree or a tree of life, it's very similar. You sort of have this root system in the ground. It comes up as a trunk, and it looks like this little tree. And then the vines kind of come out, and they string over the various like wood structures that are set up to help it grow. And so my point is, we don't often associate this passage with what we understand of the tree of life, as you see throughout the Old Testament and you see in Revelation. But what I believe Jesus to be claiming, it's the same imagery. And as we have specific words for different types of trees and different type of plants, there wasn't as much diversity, and at least the way in which the Bible talks about trees. And so what I think Jesus is claiming is that I'm the vine. I'm the source of life for the world. You come to me to find fruit. And that's what I believe Jesus is claiming. And then he continues on in the metaphor. He says, and my Father is the gardener. In other words, my Father is the one who maintains the tree and goes about maintaining it and keeps it. Right? Adam and Eve were to keep the garden. Right? And here it says that God is the keeper of this garden. He's the keeper of the vine, keeper of the tree. And he goes on in verse 2, kind of maps out this metaphor, and he says, he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit. And while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. So the first thing I want to notice here is that the Father removes branches that do not bear fruit. And my understanding and kind of the way in which the agricultural thought of the day is that they did this. This was like a fall pruning of trees. Is that they would go through in the fall and they would remove the branches that didn't bear fruit in the vineyard. And they go and cut out the branches that had withered and they weren't producing anything. They were fruitless and weren't producing fruit. So this was sort of that fall cleaning, as we'll see, or fall cleaning up of the garden, maintaining and keeping it. And then the second thing we see in this passage is that the Father also prunes the branches that are bearing fruit so that they can bear more fruit. So there's this, and that's more of this sort of this spring cleaning that would take place, the spring pruning that would take place, is that they would prune the branches so that, you know, they cut away some of the sort of the crowded limbs crowded fruit so that it could bear more fruit. It would have room to continue to grow. And so what we see here is that, yes, the Father removes branches that do not bear fruit, which we'll come to in just a moment, but the Father also prunes branches. And as we are the branches, he says, if you plug into me, you're connected to me and to the tree of life, right? That you are a branch. He says, the Father prunes the branches. The Father prunes us so that we can bear more fruit. And to us, that might sound like a uncomfortable thing, Right? I thought this was supposed to bring joy. This was supposed to be, bring fulfillment. This was supposed to cause us to thrive. Why is he talking about something, a process that sounds uncomfortable? And what I think that Jesus is talking about here, he's talking about the process in which we grow as disciples. He says, you want life, you come to me, you connect to me. But that doesn't mean that everything's going to be comfortable. He said, because in order to grow, you need to be pruned. Right? The theologians would call this the process of sanctification, this process of becoming holy, this process of becoming more like God. He says, and that's a pruning process. But it's a good process. Because as we're pruned, as we're disciplined, and as we are face challenges that cause us to grow, we become more like God, and we experience life more as he intended it to be. And so here he uses this word clean, and don't think necessarily of purity and sort of like the purity principles of the Old Testament, but think more of how you clean up a tree in order you cut away limbs here, you cut away extra leaves here so it can grow. He says, and you are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. That the word of God has this power as we come to it, and it convicts us. It sanctifies us. It causes us to see things that need to be removed from our life. It causes us to see areas in which we're not thriving. We're not being connected to Jesus in certain areas of our life. And in those areas, the Father's pruning. He's cutting those things away. And yes, it's a painful process, but ultimately it's so that we can thrive as he's called us to do. And in verse 4, he says, remain in me as I also remain in you. And no branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. And this is an important one for us to get. Because as much as perhaps this week we celebrate independence, and independence is a great thing. The gospel has a lot to say about freedom. But at the same time, when you come to Christ and you submit your life to him and confess him as king, it's also a dependence day for you. Is that you are proclaiming that I'm going to be totally dependent on Christ. That total autonomy is not a good thing in life. That we are called to be connected and dependent on the God who created us. And Jesus says, I'm the vine, and no branch can bear fruit outside of him. You can't do this on your own. You can't create this life that you're trying to create independent of Jesus. He says, ultimately, you will not bear fruit. No one can bear fruit outside of Jesus. And so the branch must remain in the vine. And continues on and says it again. He says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. But then he reminds us. And in a country where we live free and we live autonomous, we need to remember this. Because it speaks to our hearts. Is that apart from me, you can do nothing. Because apart from him, we don't bear fruit. We find ourselves back in that empty shed. We are unable to live as God intended us to live, to thrive as God intended us to thrive. And then he continues on with this metaphor and kind of concludes it a bit here, and then he's going to explain it. But he says, if you do not remain in me, say, I'm independent of God. I don't need him. I don't need to be continue to be plugged in to the vine. It says, if you don't remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. And such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. And I find this metaphor for judgment really interesting here. Because we can look at God and say, what an angry God that he would prune the bush and that he would throw away the branches. But in reality, what God is doing is simply observing what has happened and cleaning up the mess. Is ultimately, it's not God proclaiming that we are not good, that we're fruitless, but instead we have unconnected ourselves from God. We've disconnected ourselves from God. And because of that, we've withered. And all judgment is God observing that we've withered. We've withered away because we've unconnected ourselves from him. And then he cleans up the mess so that the other branches can thrive. And then he continues on and he says in verses 7 through 17, he begins to explain this metaphor a bit and what he's really getting at in this metaphor. And he continues on in verse 7. He says, if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. Now, of course, that's a principle. God is not a genie in the bottle. But what he's saying is, listen, the life you're looking for, where you are taken care of, you have all that you need in this life. He says, it's going to be there for you, It's not that God gives you three wishes and you can have whatever you want, but it's that God is there with you to take care of you, to listen to your needs when you have needs, and to be there and to work in your life when you call for him. He says, but as the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Now remain in my love. And what we see here is that the purpose here of what Jesus is talking about is to instruct the disciples to abide, remain, and live in Jesus. And the question is, what does that look like? Right, that's the truth. Jesus is saying, and Jesus is saying this exclusively. Jesus has been really exclusive in how he's talked about this. He's saying, listen, if you don't remain in me, death's on the other side of that. Those are all the other areas in our life that we try to connect to, the other ways of thriving that we try to connect to. He says, they're counterfeit. They're not going to provide you life. They just produce death. He says, but you need to remain in me in order to find life. Now, what does that look like? He continues on. He says, if you keep my commandments, you remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. Now, it'd be really easy to read this and to see some kind of legalistic sort of framework that, see, it's keep the commandments and God will love you. No, that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that when you're plugged into Jesus and you keep his commandments, his teachings, his way of life, that's a continuation of being plugged into him and being connected to him. That to be plugged into him isn't to just say, I believe in Jesus, and to go on living your life, but to be plugged into Jesus is to be living the way of Jesus, to be walking according to his teachings, to be a disciple, to be learning from him day in and day out, and learning what that looks like. And we're going to come to that the charge that he gives the disciples here. What is this big, what are the commands he calls us to carry out? But he says the results. When we do, when we totally commit ourselves to the ways and the teachings of Jesus, he says the results ultimately are disciples who produce fruit. In other words, the disciples who produce what they were looking for. They were looking for that which satisfies, looking for that which thrives, just as we all are. He says, and the results of being plugged into Jesus, walking after his ways, living according to his teachings, his way of life, he says, ultimately the result is fruit. It's thriving. It's life. It's abundance. It's blessings. He says in verse 8, he says, this is my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. And again, this isn't a legalistic framework where, oh, I've proved I'm his disciples because I've done X, Y, and Z. No, it's that you're so plugged into Jesus that people see the fruit of it in your life, that they can see what is growing from that and what is developing from the fact that Jesus is your teacher and you're his disciple. And it's actually producing good in your life, that you're being people of love, people of joy, people of goodness. And there's a question here. What does it mean to bear fruit? You know, a lot of times when I hear people talk about bearing fruit, we're talking about making disciples, right? You're multiplying. You're producing more people who also bear fruit. And okay, another way that I hear us talk about it is, of course, maybe reflecting on the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians 5 and 6. And having more love, more peace, more joy, more contentment, more self-control in our life. The more we're connected to Jesus, the more those things develop. We become more patient people, more kind people. You see the fruits in the life of disciples of Jesus. And then still more, we would say maybe the fruit, I've heard people talk about the fruits of Jesus as being acts of service that we see, and some of those fruits of the Spirit kind of lived out in real, actual ways through actions and through our words. And the reality is, I think I lean towards it being more the fruits of the Spirit, but the reality is, I think that it's all three of those things. And Colin Cruz, in his commentary on John, says, fruit here refers to the entire life and ministry of those who follow Jesus' teaching and experience his presence in their life through the Spirit. Is ultimately, it's every area of our life that Christ permeates, every area of life. When we are plugged into him and we're truly plugged into him, he gets every fiber of our being, every area of our mind, every area of our life, every area of our actions, that Jesus permeates it and transforms it, resurrects it, and causes us to thrive when we truly give ourselves over to the way and the teachings of Jesus. Now, I said we would come to this point where we sort of define what the commands are. What are these commands we are to give ourselves over to? Because in churches like ours, there's been a lot of commands that we would say, we would talk about in the Old Testament, there were 613 laws and that the Israelites would try to keep all of those laws. Well, I can tell you, in the churches I grew up in, we had way more than 613 laws that you had to keep. So what does it look like to keep the commandments of Jesus? And I think Jesus says this, as he sums it up like this, he says, my command, could he be any clearer than this? He says, my command is this. He says, keep my commands. What is it, Jesus? My command is this. Love each other as I have loved you. As Jesus modeled that in his life, and the way he treated others, and the way he interacted with others, and ultimately the way in which he gave of himself. And he continues on in verse 13, gives that as a bit of an illustration. He says, look, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. And again, he reiterates, this is my command, love each other. Now, that doesn't mean there's no other teachings of Jesus that we need to adhere to. But what it does mean is ultimately any command or any theological statement that does not lead us to further love of others, of God and of others, is to be suspect. Is that we're to examine teachings, we're to examine philosophies, we're to examine behaviors and say, does this cause me to live into the command of Jesus to love? And if it doesn't, we need to examine it and perhaps set it aside or realize it's not the ultimate emphasis of our faith. And give ourselves to the practices of Jesus that lead us to greater love, greater joy, greater self-control. Right? That the teachings of Jesus ultimately should bear fruit in our life. And anyone's theology that causes someone to be unjoyful, unkind, or rude ought to be suspect. And we ought to look at it and say, it's not producing the fruit it's supposed to be producing. Therefore, we need to examine it and look at it. And we look at our own theology, our own practice, we need to ask this question. Is it producing the fruit of Jesus in our life? If not, we need to examine it. Because those who produce fruit ultimately display love. And now this isn't one of those sermons where it's all about love, it's all about, kind of ooey-gooey, but it's actually living out the way of Jesus. It produces love. This is not a love that doesn't confront. It's not a love that doesn't deal with real issues in life, but it's a love that chooses to be kind, chooses self-control, chooses patience, even in difficult situations. And Jesus says, if you live this way that connected to him, connected to his way, his teachings, connected to bearing fruit, he says, ultimately your joy will be complete. He says, I have told you this so that my joy might be in you, and that your joy might be complete. In other words, he wants for us what we want in our life, which is fulfillment, satisfaction. He says the way to do so, the way to have your joy complete, your joy fully satisfied, is to be connected in him, to give yourself over to his teachings, and see love bear its fruit in your life. And that's only done through being connected to Jesus. Something that John Piper says that I really like. He says that God is most glorified in us when we are most satisfied in him. That is what Jesus is talking about here, I believe. Is that if we truly want to live a life that we live satisfied and God is glorified, it starts by being satisfied in Christ. That's what we are called to. That God will be glorified and your joy will be filled when we're connected to Jesus. And so here's kind of our point this morning, or one thing to walk away with, is that all people must be connected to Jesus in order to live fruitfully and joyfully. That doesn't mean other people don't have fruit in their lives and other people don't have joy in their life, but I mean this ultimately, is that if we want the ultimate fruit to be displayed in our life, we want the ultimate joy that is to be experienced in life, it starts with being connected by Jesus, or in Jesus. And the practical ways in which we do that is we devote ourselves to God and the spiritual disciplines. We make sure we're connected into a spiritual family who are also connected to that vine. That this is not an individual pursuit. It's a pursuit of the community. That we are all branches plugged into the vine. And we're all in this pursuit of living fruitfully and joyfully together. And then it also requires us to set aside the counterfeit ways of finding joy, the counterfeit ways of finding satisfaction in this life. And continuing, and that's a continuous process of pruning, removing the bad fruit in our life and continuing to allow room for God's fruit to be able to be produced in our lives. So if you're here this morning, you have a need, you'd like to come to Jesus today, confess Him as Lord, confess Him as King, submit yourself to Him through the act of baptism. We would love to be here to celebrate that with you this morning. But maybe you're here and you already are a disciple of Jesus, and we're challenged by this as we find ourselves throughout life in these ebbs and flows, and we find ourselves sort of wandering away from God at times, wandering away from the vine and needing to connect ourselves back. Or maybe we just need to be pruned a bit to remove some of the bad fruit, the things that have been produced by searching it, and searching for joy, searching for thriving in the wrong places. And you want to bring that before your brothers and sisters in Christ this morning. Or maybe you'd like to do so privately. You'd like to step into the prayer room on my right here through the back into the Kidman hallway and to sit down with one of our shepherds who could talk about some of those challenging areas this morning. But rest assured, although the pruning is uncomfortable at times, it leaves us room, leaves us margin in order to grow and to produce fruit like God intended us to. And behind that is joy, satisfaction, and flourishing. Thank you for coming this morning. I hope you'll join us now as we stand and while we sing.